Well, as they say in the commercials, life comes at you fast. And like any president, Trump has had to deal with some crises that he wasn't counting on. Lately, we've seen the more populist Trump rear his head again, where he's talking about slapping tariffs on imported goods and trying to level the playing field for American merchants.
Well, let's start with the devastation of Western New York and the loss of jobs since NAFTA. And the problem, Kevin, is we don't need three-way agreements. We need bilateral agreements, the U.S. and Canada, and a different, totally different agreement, U.S. and Mexico. So I'm all about trade for us with these other countries, but they need to be bilateral agreements, and certainly that's what I'm supporting. Right, but
persuade me that Amazon isn't at its peak.
I think if you look objectively, this is a $165 billion run rate retailer that is growing 24% on the top line. E-commerce is in the mid-teens as a percentage of overall retail sales. We have a very long runway ahead of retail sales moving to e-commerce platforms. We think Amazon is going to be the main beneficiary, ex-China, on a global scale of that trend.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It is May 1st, 2017. Wow, that happened fast, didn't it? Welcome to another business day, another business week, another episode of The Opening Bell. Glad to have you along. Lots to talk about this morning. A little bit later in the program, we will be welcoming in the co-founder of FinTech Chicago and managing director at FinTech Forge. This is a new fintech group starting in Chicago. We'll talk with the new co-founder of that group coming up in just a minute, our CEO Spotlight. But first, let's start on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are looking for a positive open on Wall Street when the bell rings later, up 27 points. S&P and NASDAQ futures are a little bit higher this morning. Gold and silver are trading lower. Crude oil is at $49.16 a barrel. Most of the markets in Europe are closed today for the Labor Day, as it's called there, or May Day holiday in most of those countries. In Japan, the Nikkei is up almost 0.5%, 113 points. The Asian Dow is a little bit higher as well. Generally a holiday today in most of the places outside of the United States celebrating May Day for today. A couple of stories we're watching for you since you went to bed last night. Congress has approved a $1 trillion spending plan that funds day-to-day operations for the government through September, denying President Trump funding for a border wall, rejecting many of his cuts to popular domestic programs. Aides to lawmakers involved in the talks announced the agreement after weeks of negotiation. It is expected to be made public early today. The catch-all spending bill would be the first major piece of bipartisan legislation to advance during President Trump's short tenure. One other interesting story today. You know, you've arrived as a country when you have your own font. Dubai is not apparently happy having the world's tallest building, an indoor ski slope, and countless other big deals. But now it has its own typographic font. The forward-looking Mideast Business Hub is unveiling the new font today, designed with Microsoft's help. It's going to help them, I guess, publicize, do more PR around the globe. A font that we'll try to tweet out here for you this morning on the Opening Bell. In our CEO Spotlight today, we're going to be talking a little bit about brands. It has been really a wild couple of months for brands. You name it, McDonald's, United Airlines, the White House, American Airlines, Delta Airlines. A lot of those brands have had, Pepsi is another one, have had really rough couple of weeks. Nicole Ertis is an executive advisor. She's also a global brand strategist. She's the author of a new book called Free Range Brands. And she's with us this morning here on The Opening Bell. Nicole, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Steve.
It's so good to have you here because we've talked to you before in The Opening Bell.
Uh-huh.
And it was a wonderful conversation. And so the opportunity to have you back in for a bigger conversation is even more exciting.
Great. Thank you.
And you have come at a great time because brands
right.
are all over the headlines.
Yep.
The situation at United, first, your take on it all.
Well, I think, what we're seeing is more and more that brands have to recognize that they're that they're bigger than just the product that they offer. They go all the way up to the leadership and the culture of the organization. And if all stakeholders aren't embraced with that and aren't embodying that culture and living it, the brand really will suffer.
And is it a case of them being too big in cases of like United? I mean, it seems like so many mistakes were made from the very beginning. It's hard to imagine a big company doing that.
Well, yeah, I would imagine the bigger the company is and the more acquisitions and new cultures that they bring in, the harder it is to create a culture where everybody is kind of singing off the same song sheet. However, because of the world we live in today, it's absolutely imperative that it happens. And we do see companies that do it with an example would be maybe Taco Bell has 7,000 stores, and that company has been able to create a very clear culture of what that brand stands for. So it is very possible, but it comes from the top.
We often in journalism, behind the scenes in the newsroom, talk about journalism 101 when we make mistakes or others make mistakes, thinking about college and that first course you ever take. Branding 101 seems to be at fail here. When you look at how Oscar Munoz at United handled this situation, handling the situation from the very moment it happened, did he make mistakes right there at the beginning?
Well, I think the biggest mistakes they made are not coming forth right away. And I think everybody, you know, consumers are very forgiving. They understand that mistakes happen. I mean, obviously, this was a big one. And I think there were probably some proactive measures that the company could be doing that would prevent something like this happening. But once something like this happens, the biggest mistake these organizations make is that they try to defend themselves and they don't adapt to the situation. They don't recognize what's causing the problem and they don't take steps immediately to course correct and come out publicly, very humbly, very quickly.
And that doing it immediately is very important because everyone has a camera
that's
connected to the internet.
Yep.
Talk to me about how important that is.
Well, if you don't get ahead of that when something like that happens, you're on your heels on that. And once you're on your heels, it almost looks like you're defending because you, you know, were called out on it. And I think a lot of these big organizations and brand leaders, it has been so many years where they have been able to live up in the ivory tower, and mistakes like this, you know, wouldn't get broadcast or wouldn't be seen instantly, or consumer complaints would get buried in the call center, and they never really had to be addressed so quickly. So it comes back to the culture of the organization, and that a lot of times the leadership at the top is of an older generation that isn't really getting a handle on how important it is to move quickly.
So much is changing in branding these days, and that's really the reason we have you in for a CEO Spotlight today. Talk to us a little bit about Free Range Brands and this idea that's behind your company.
Yeah. Well, thank you. We, you know, I've worked for the traditional CPG brands for the first 10 years of my career. So I was at SC Johnson and kind of got my feet wet there and learned how to build big consumer packaged goods brands, and then went on to Beam and worked in spirits across a lot of categories and stayed within the corporate environment up until a global director role, at which point I went off on my own. And it was at that time, about 10 years or 11 years ago now, when I did that brands were, we were still in a position where the small brands couldn't really be threatening. They couldn't get on shelf because it was too expensive to get into the stores. They couldn't get on TV. So the barriers to entry to be a smaller brand were really too high. And so the culture within these organizations was that the small brands were really not something to really worry about. And during the last 10 years, we've seen a complete upheaval in that. You know, now we've got these saucy, you know, brands just dripping with authenticity and passionate leaders and purpose and all the stuff that makes them desirable by consumers today. And the big brands are just scrambling to figure out how to put that together. And so to me, the big difference, because a lot of my clients after I went off on my own started to say, how can we be like these small brands now? And that was just an unbelievable, you know, turn of events. And so I've spent a lot of time researching what makes these small brands do really well. And the main thing that I can say that they do that's very different from the traditional brands is that they make the consumer and the community the hero and not the product the hero.
And part of that, too, is it that these smaller companies seem to be organic, and I don't mean like organic, like grown in organic soil, but just this organic nature, and that they're not those big brands.
Yes.
Does that work for them?
It does, but there's big brands that can do it as well. I think what really works for them is that they create a culture that does have a really strong purpose behind it. And a lot of the big brands are seeking out this idea of what is our purpose, because you know, in all honesty, they weren't manufactured. They weren't created in a time where purpose was important. They were created when you made glass cleaner to clean glass. It didn't have a bigger purpose than that, you know? And now it's their challenge to say, well, what's our noble purpose or what's our worldly purpose? And, you know, these brands find that somewhat difficult. And so that's not to say that they can't do it. And in fact, they should do it. And they've actually got great power to do it. But the smaller brands do it naturally because it's really what makes them. It really is oftentimes what started the brand to begin with.
How important to that purpose is the generation of consumers that we have now that's coming into their buying power? The millennials I'm talking specifically about, who want their brands to be, again, I go back to that organic word, but to have some sort of loyalty to it, they have to have some purpose.
They absolutely have to have purpose because this generation not only grew up in a time where they had a front row, you know, seat to see everything. I mean, you think about when we grew up, we had three channels, right? Yeah. And four maybe. And now they can see everything, and they have since they were small. And it's the most diverse, most globally connected generation. And frankly, the boomers, which are many of their parents, were very much activists and influencers. And they had that mindset to teach their children to go out and change the world. And in a time when we see a lot of older boomers looking at the millennials in the workforce and scratching their heads saying, what's up with these kids? The reality is they're actually quite similar. They just have different tools. They're the alpha influencers. They want to see change. And they have access to every product there is now at every price point. I mean, products are just commodities now. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's going to make the difference between a product and a brand is what it's doing beyond just making profit.
How important is the arena? You mentioned the TV station. I remember we had black and white TV when I was a kid. The arena where there's just so many different ways to get people's attention. How important is that?
Well, I think for a brand, what that means is you can't rely on the old school method of just creating one TV commercial that's going to run for 2 years and then perhaps repurpose that same content all over social. Different social channels have their own culture, and they have their own ways of interacting with consumers. And interaction, this idea of two-way interaction, is really the most profound change, because in the world that most of these senior executives grew up in, all our media was one way. It was TV, print, radio. There was no opportunity for a consumer response. Now, if you don't understand that it's two-way, you're missing a really big opportunity to build that brand.
And the consumer response on some social media, as we saw with United, is instantaneous.
It's instantaneous.
Yeah. And go ahead.
I was going to say, the key is, you know, to prepare yourself to not have those experiences, but even more, use that two-way opportunity to really cultivate lovers of your brand and consumers that want to interact and help create community around your brand.
And you call that brand currency, right?
Yeah, I do.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. So when I was growing up in brand, it was all about building brand equity. And if you think about it, your brand equity is just by nature a term that's very static. It's what does your brand mean? It's inert. It's something that's accumulated over a long period of time. But today you have to be very relevant and interactive and timely and current. And if you can't translate that brand equity into what I call brand currency, you aren't creating the opportunity to be more transactional and interactive with your community.
Who's doing it well in that area?
I mentioned Taco Bell. I think I'll expand on that because I just read an article about them again this morning. But they're doing it so well because that is in a quick serve restaurant environment where, you know, brands are really struggling because even the new millennials and Gen Z, they want better food. Taco Bell has completely grabbed that audience by transitioning from being a food for fuel to a food for experience. And they've created a cult-like, experiential, iconic brand around who they are. And so rather than trying to compete with Mexican food, they're doing it by creating a cultural experience and allowing their customers to interact, giving them endless tools to speak back to them. They're giving them lots of opportunities to be surprised by them and share news with their followers, etc. So they really get it. They understand that it's not about selling what the product is, but it's about creating the experience.
In your book, Free Range Brands, one of the interesting things I love about it is you talk about these different kinds of consumers and you have names for them.
Yes.
Tell us the names of them and what they do.
Okay. So they are archetypes, and they basically are, you know, personifications of how a consumer interacts with the brand. So there's lords, lovers, hackers, and hawks. And lords value discovery. Everybody today has some sort of a social following. And if the news of your brand is everywhere, you probably aren't going to share it on your social channels because everybody already knows about it. But if you find your lords, who are your key influencers, but maybe not, you know, big celebrities, but maybe some people that are your pure loyalists, and give them something special, something secret, something that nobody else has, then you're giving them information that they can share, and that's discovery. And that's a very profound social currency today. There's lovers, and lovers connect on chemistry. Their currency is chemistry, and chemistry is really about shared values. So rather than creating brands that are just about, you know, talking about your features and benefits, what is it you value? This is where purpose comes in, because that's going to create endless entry points for conversation. Hackers is my favorite, because hackers, their currency is interactivity. They want to be involved with building your brand. So they don't just want to hear what you have to say and listen to who you are and read your messages. They actually want to help craft your messages. They expect interaction. They expect response. They like to co-create and collaborate. So think about entry points to do that. And then lastly, hawks. Their currency is validity, and they value truth. And this is where United got skewered, because they were not prepared for their hawks. And in order to be prepared for your hawks, you need to practice what you preach all throughout your organization. And this really gets into corporate culture.
Do you find, when you're talking to the corporate types and trying to advise them, that they're willing to listen to all these things and take it all in? Or do you fight sometimes against a current that goes the other way?
A lot of the big organizations are really structured with different models, with the old school models. And, you know, I speak to brilliant people who get it, who know it, very strong creatives. They have all the money in the world. They can do it. But the structures and the models that they're using really can be prohibitive to making it happen within the organization, just in the nature of, you know, testing. A lot of times we test for years before we would roll out a new product, or everything has to be really vetted through legal before your communication can go out. So with these mechanisms in place, it's very hard for a very large organization that has a lot to lose to be agile and nimble.
I always, when I hear free-range brands, always think of that free-range chicken walking around the farm doing whatever it wants. But in reality, that's kind of what you're talking about here. You have to have a little bit of that freedom to be able to be successful.
Yeah. The reason I came up with the name was because it's this idea of setting yourself up to let go. So it doesn't mean relinquish all control. It doesn't mean just go out there and be chaotic and schizophrenic. It means be very clear about who you are, but balance that authenticity with a lot of relevancy. So it's a very high bar today, because you have to be timeless. At the same time, you have to be trendy. If you're one or the other without both, you're either boring or old school, or maybe, you know, all over the map and unclear as to who you are.
I'm sure you have your hands full with the current, but do you ever think of the future and where we might be in 5 to 10 years, where all of this is concerned?
Oh, my hope is that the millennials are going to save us.
We hope. Right. Lots of pressure.
Well, I know. It is a lot of pressure. But I do believe they are so purely motivated for change. And they were raised in team environments. They're the Wiki generation. They know how to work together. And so thankfully, the world wasn't left to Gen X, which is my generation. But the millennials and the Gen Z, they are really, like we talked about in the beginning, wired for change and wired to influence. And they're not afraid to express themselves, and they're not afraid to work together. And because they're putting pressure on brands by which brands they'll purchase, I think what we're going to see and what brands are going to have to do is really start to take the power that they have and lead with greater purpose than just profits.
And Nicole, what's also comforting too is knowing that even though there are these giant corporations, that you and I and all of the other consumers out there still have some power. If it's through social media or whatever, we still have power, shown by this United case.
Yes.
Yeah, we can still bring about change.
That's right.
Nicole, good having you on. Thanks for coming in, and best of luck.
Thanks so much.
Nicole is a global brand strategist, the executive advisor, CEO behind Free Range Brands. So you can check her out online, freerangebrands.com, and see more about her book there, and follow on Twitter at Free Range Brands.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:41. Glad to have you along for our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. FinTech is short for financial technology, and Chicago's getting a new group specializing in it, focusing on startups who specialize in FinTech. Currency is a new initiative announced last week, is led by a team that runs industry association FinTechs Chicago. Jason Henricks is co-founder of FinTechs. He's with us this morning here in the Opening Bell. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning.
Glad to have you along with us. So tell us what Currency will do and who it's going to be focused towards.
Sure. Currency is a center of excellence focused on developing best practices for innovation within financial technology. And we serve four constituents. We work very closely with the academic community, both on a research and development of curriculum side, with large corporations, so the incumbents within financial services, startups, and finally with regulators, connecting those regulators with the innovators within the corporations and the startups.
Is this is a simple way to describe this sort of an incubator for fintech startups?
No, we're different than an incubator in the sense that we're not running a program where we take equity or providing a co-working space. There is space, and part of what we do create is a physical hub. But what we're really focused on is the level beyond, which is the best practices, which we can distribute virtually throughout all parts of our community and even globally through our partnership with the Global FinTech Hub Federation.
And why is it important to have sort of all of those resources in one centralized location, as it will be with this currency group? Why is that important for startups?
It is important for the corporations, actually, as it is for the startups. Is financial services is really being replaced by financial technology. Goldman Sachs and Chase being two great examples say they're no longer financial service businesses, they're financial technology businesses. Having that scheduled interaction and that density is really important to create serendipity as well as to push things forward. And as we look at Chicago, and we were just ranked by Deloitte as a top five global fintech hub, it's really important for us to create and push that thought leadership as we look to remain competitive on the global landscape.
And it's important to talk a little bit about that, what you said about fintech and some of these big banks sort of changing their mission statements for that. What are we talking about? Artificial intelligence types of technology that's used for financial, all kinds of financial management and investment, those kinds of things?
Yeah, across the board, everything from artificial intelligence to the importance of cybersecurity, rolling out deep learning and machine learning, development of new sorts of interfaces, and the boundaries begin to blur between lots of the services, that interaction between the trading technologies and how trading can be applied in all sorts of alternative currencies. And I'm not talking about just cryptocurrencies, thinking about, you know, what if we were to trade health insurance and break up risk in the same way that we break up futures? And what if we were to apply similar sorts of methodology to things, you know, that we don't always think of as a currency, but very much as one, like airline miles?
So what kinds of challenges have you had getting going here? I know this was just announced last Wednesday. What are the first steps that Currency will take to sort of become a presence?
Sure. So we will be opening our doors June 1st, and we have three programs that we'll be rolling out right out of the gate. One is working very closely with the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation to create office hours for innovators looking to work within financial services to get input on what sort of regulation that they're going to need to comply with. Secondly, we work very closely with University of Chicago, Northwestern, and DePaul, and we're looking to always expand that, around creating greater connectivity between their students and the fintech community. And last, we're rolling out a program we call Mentor Match, which is how do we connect the corporations and the startups that are looking to do business together.
Talk to us a little bit, Jason, about where we sort of stand. I mean, we, Chicago, in the world of fintech, are we one of the top places where this is happening? I would assume so, since we have a lot of the big exchanges here. I'm thinking of the CBOE, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So we are one of the most innovative when it comes to financial services. And one of the challenges is incumbency as an innovator within financial services does not necessarily directly translate into being a leader within financial technology. And so our recent number five ranking is actually the result of a very concerted effort of large players, some that you've just described. And it's not just about trading. One of the greatest aspects of the Chicago ecosystem is the diversity of what we have here, from payment networks to alternative lenders, to the impact of the university, and yes, the exchanges and the trading. Those are all really important. It's the fact that we have all of them here that makes us special.
Yeah, and I saw that the Deloitte rankings this year actually included Chicago in the top five, wasn't it?
Yep, which is great because last year we weren't even ranked.
Yeah. So what do you attribute that to? Just the general nature? I think those of us who cover startups here in the city and some of the entrepreneur aspects of it, we kind of know this, but are we coming into our own in that area?
Yes, we're definitely coming into our own. And part of that is being able to pull all of the great things that are going on in this city and telling a single cohesive story on a global scale. And it really is the fact that we are such a dominant trading and banking center. And on the startup side, the number of things that we have coming up, you know, we have our own unicorns in Avant. We have some early leaders like Pangea Payments and Ripple Shot and Akuba, all coming to the surface across a wide range of the spectrum of financial services. And that's what makes us special.
Jason, one of the things that's pretty exciting about this, I've heard from a couple of people, is that it'll be the corporations that sort of pay the fee here, right? They'll pay the weight, and it's the startups who are going to sort of get free access to all of this.
Well, it isn't all free, but it is a sliding scale. And yes, the slide does go all the way down to zero for certain sorts of programming. And one of the things we're very cognizant of here is there's a real return on investment for the corporations that are partnering here, that what we're providing them is access. Like if they were to go create their own fintech lab and to go pursue the sort of partnership, Pricewaterhouse has done research and says that you very quickly get into the seven-figure range in order to do that, and we don't charge nearly that amount.
Jason, this is very exciting. We'll be staying tuned to see how this all comes out, but looks like an exciting start.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Jason Hendricks is the co-founder of Fintechs in Chicago, talking to us about Currency, the new fintech initiative announced here in Chicago.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. 554 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. We're looking for a positive open on Wall Street later. Dow futures up 34. NASDAQ and S&P futures are up about a quarter each. Crude oil at $49.11. Gold and silver are lower this morning. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve, and welcome to the month of May. We're starting this month on a very busy note, particularly for the new Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue. Today, he will unveil an interim rule designed to provide flexibility for school meals. Perdue will make the announcement during a visit to an elementary school in Leesburg, Virginia. That will happen this morning, but then this afternoon, he'll be on the line on a video cast with six chapters of the Future Farmers of America from across the country. And that will originate at the C.S. Monroe Technology Center, Leesburg, Virginia. And then this week is Blossom Time, festival time in southwest Michigan. The other thing we'll watch this week, cattle prices hitting a one-year high on Friday. Can they keep that up? Back a little bit later throughout the day with reports. For now, I'm Orion Samuelson. You have a great day.
All right, Orion, you too. Thank you. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Monday, May 1st, 2017, two major government economic reports due out today. Both are from the Commerce Department. One report examines personal income and spending for March. The other report outlines construction spending for March. Also today, the Institute of Supply Management releases its manufacturing index for April. This is going to be a busy week. The Federal Reserve begins its two-day meeting starting tomorrow. Lots of earnings, including big tech earnings this week. Tomorrow, starting with Apple, Aetna, BP, MasterCard. On Wednesday, we'll see Facebook, Tesla, Fitbit. We'll also get the U.S. crude inventories data. CBS will report earnings on Thursday. The jobs report comes in on Friday. So a busy week on the calendar this week. Lots of things that could move the markets. That is the outlook for this Monday, May 1st, 2017.